Oh my God, I've already ordered it. Hold on. Wait, I have to go.
We'll get things started. We'll reconvene the city council meeting of Tuesday, September 24th, 2024. For Fuentes, if you would please call the roll.
Thank you, Council President. Council President Pro Tem Lacava.
Present.
Councilmember Campbell. Councilmember Whitburn.
Here.
Councilmember Foster.
Here.
Councilmember Von Wolfert.
Present.
Councilmember Lee.
Here.
Councilmember Campillo. Councilmember Moreno. Council President Ela Rivera. Also attending the meeting are Senior Chief Deputy City Attorney Heather Ferber, Independent Budget Analyst Charles Monica, Council Affairs Advisor in the Mayor's Office, Code Advisor, and myself, your City Clerk, Deanna Fuentes.
All right. Would you like to go through the public testimony procedures for the business? And once you've done that, do you want to introduce the first item?
Thank you, Council President. I'll go over how the public can offer their public testimony during this afternoon's meeting. If you are in person, please complete a speaker slip located at the entrance of chambers and please submit it to the high lectern at the front of the room. Please submit your speaker slip in a timely manner to ensure proper meeting management. Council ambassadors are available near the entrance of chambers and can assist with questions and speaker slips. No further in-person testimony will be taken once the council begins virtual testimony. If you would like to participate virtually, you can do so via the webinar information found on the agenda cover page. Members of the public who wish to provide virtual testimony must enter the virtual queue by raising their hand by either dialing *9 or pressing the raise your hand icon before the queue closes. The queue will close when the last virtual speaker finishes speaking or 5 minutes after in-person testimony ends, whichever occurs first. This afternoon, the agenda items will be taken in the following order. Item 331, followed by item S502. Both are informational items. Item 331 is the 2024 annual report on homes. Again, this is an informational item. And if you'd like to speak to this item, please be sure to raise your hand by pressing *9 or the raise your hand icon. Thank you, Council President.
Thank you. All right. With that, have our presenters introduce yourselves for the record and let us know how much time you'd like for this presentation.
Good afternoon, council members. My name is Grant Brody. I need about 15 minutes. Good afternoon, council members. My name is Grant Rudy. I'm a senior planner in the city planning department. I'm here with Jeff Ryan, development project manager of housing policy and city planning, Seth Lishney, program manager of housing policy and city planning, Tate Galloway, deputy director of community planning and housing and city planning, and Heidi Baumblum, city planning director. I'm happy to present an information item on the 2024 annual report on homes. While my presentation will provide an overview of relevant data points and key takeaways, the City Planning Department is available to answer any questions about the entire report and to take feedback from the City Council for use in future annual reports. The 2024 Annual Report on Homes is a comprehensive review of home permitting data in the city during the calendar year 2023 and includes the data reported in the Housing Element Annual Progress Report. In our progress report details information on home development proposals and permitting data, the progress made on meeting the city's regional housing needs targets, and the progress made on the implementation of the general plan's housing element. The enterprise report is required to be submitted to the California Department of Housing and Community Development, which occurred in March of 2024. The report on homes also includes an analysis of the use of the city's home incentive programs, a summary of home permitting trends, an analysis of home developments on sites in the housing element's adequate sites inventory, and an assessment of the city's progress in affirmatively furthering fair housing. The 2024 housing permit data shows substantial progress on home issuances in general and affordable home issuances in particular. In total, 9,693 new homes were permitted in 2023. Over a quarter of the newly permitted homes were deemed restricted affordable for very low, low, and moderate income households. The city of San Diego not only showed substantial progress on home issuances, we also outperformed our peer cities on a per capita basis in 2023. The city issued about 70 home permits per 10,000 San Diegans in 2023. In comparison, Los Angeles and San Francisco issued about 49 and 38 homes per 10,000 residents in their respective cities in 2023. While new home issuances were widely dispersed throughout the city, new home issuances were concentrated in the central portions of the city. Downtown, College Area, and CUNY Mesa were the three most common areas for home issuances in 2023. And here are the community planning areas with the most newly permitted affordable homes in 2023. San Ysidro, Downtown, and Encanto neighborhoods were the most common areas for affordable home issuances in 2023. The city's accessory dwelling unit home permitting continues to accelerate. In total, 1,909 ADU homes were permitted in 2023, a sharp increase over previous years. The 1,909 ADU homes represents approximately 20% of the total permitted homes in 2023. As shown in this map, ADU homes were permitted throughout the city. However, Claremont Mesa, North Park, and City Heights were the most common areas for the ADU home building permit approvals in 2023. Providing a diversity of home types ensures more people have opportunities within San Diego throughout the different stages of their lives. About 59% of new homes are either studio homes or one-bedroom homes, whereas approximately 41% of new homes contain two or more bedrooms, which can meet the needs of families of various sizes. Otay Mesa, San Ysidro, and Downtown were the most common areas for homes with two or more bedrooms for building permit approvals in 2023. As part of the annual report on homes, staff analyzed the utilization of home-related programs from 2021 to 2023, the 3 years so far in this REMA cycle. The programs that are part of this review are the ADU Home Density Bonus Program, the Complete Communities Housing Solutions Program, the Affordable Home Density Bonus Program, the Inclusionary Affordable Housing Regulations, and the Affordable Housing Permit Now Program. The ADU Home Density Bonus Program allows homeowners to build additional ADUs than otherwise permitted by right, provided that there's an affordable ADU set aside for each ADU approved through the program. The number of ADU homes approved through the ADU Density Bonus Program substantially increased from 2021 to 2023, going from 20 new homes in total in 2021 to 158 new homes in 2023. 158 homes represents 8% of the total ADU homes permitted last year. The number of new affordable homes approved through the program increased 12-fold from 2021 to 2023. Moreover, 54% of the homes submitted through the program in 2023 were affordable. The most common areas utilizing ADU Home Density Bonus Program usage in 2023 were College Area, Claremont Mesa, and Uptown. The Complete Communities Housing Solutions Program is a floor-air ratio-based home density program that allows for higher density within sustainable development areas of the city. This program saw a substantial increase in utilization from 2021 to 2023, going from 154 new homes in 2021 to 1,131 new homes in 2023, more than a sevenfold increase. Additionally, 115 new affordable homes were permitted through the program in 2023. North Park, Uptown, and College Area were the most common areas for Complete Communities Housing Solution Program usage in 2023. The city's Affordable Home Density Bonus Program allows for greater densities than otherwise allowed in the base zone, provided that a portion of the new homes are set aside as affordable. Similar to the ADU Home Density Bonus Program and the Complete Communities Housing Solutions Program, the city's Affordable Home Density Bonus Program saw a substantial increase in utilization, particularly regarding affordable homes. The number of new homes fitted through the Affordable Home Density Bonus Program increased by about 175% from 2021 to 2023. The increase in the approved new affordable homes was even greater, increasing by approximately 560% during this time. 2,157 new affordable homes were approved through the program in 2023 in total, with the most prevalent program usage in downtown, North Park, and Otay Mesa areas. The city's inclusionary affordable housing regulations encourage diverse and balanced neighborhoods with homes available to households of all income levels. The regulations apply to all residential developments proposing 10 or more homes outside of the coastal overlay zone, 5 or more homes within the coastal overlay zone, and 2 or more homes within condominium conversions. A percentage of rental and for sale homes must be set aside in eligible developments for lower income households. Our inclusionary affordable housing regulations have resulted in 234 affordable homes this arena cycle, with downtown, College Area, Kearney Mesa, and Rancho Penasquitos as the most prevalent community planning areas. Additionally, most project issued building permits due to the inclusionary housing regulations were in moderate, high, and highest resource areas. The Affordable Housing Permit Now program expedites reviews for 100% affordable projects and shelter projects. The program was created to implement Mayor Todd Gloria's Executive Order 2023-1 and was used to approve 1,082 new homes, with downtown and Encanto neighborhoods and Claremont Mesa being the most common areas for Affordable Housing Permit Now usage. As part of the annual report on homes, staff examined the home issuances data over a longer period of time in the current arena cycle and analyzed where in particular home issuances have occurred in the arena cycle. To this end, the annual report on homes includes an analysis of permitted homes over the previous decade, as well as an analysis of home issuances by mobility zones and resource areas in this arena cycle. This helps to track the city's progress in meeting our housing goals in the housing element, as well as the progress in affirmatively furthering fair housing and in implementing the goals of its climate action plan. Over the last 10 years, the city permitted the highest number of new homes overall and the highest number of affordable homes in 2023. Multifamily homes and ADU homes represent approximately 83% of the homes permitted since 2014. The number of ADU homes permitted since 2018 has been increasing, whereas the number of single-family homes since that time has been decreasing. For us to meet our arena housing goals by 2029, we will need to permit more than 82,000 homes. While we are on pace to meet our arena allocation for above moderate homes, we must make substantial progress on very low, low, and moderate income homes in the coming years. Mobility zones 1 and 2 are areas that have the greatest access to transit in the city. Since 2021, about 86% of all new homes and nearly 9 in 10 affordable homes were located within mobility zones 1 and 2. By permitting more homes near transit, the city is implementing the goals of its climate action plan. The city is committed to affirmatively furthering fair housing. A key component of fair housing is providing opportunities for all community members to live in the neighborhoods of their choice. To achieve this, the city is encouraging more affordable homes within higher resource areas of the city where affordable homes do not currently exist. For example, the city modified its inclusionary affordable housing regulations and its affordable housing regulations to allow for off-site affordable homes in high and highest resource areas of the city. Additionally, the city's affordable housing and all communities regulations permit affordable multi-homes and base zones that do not otherwise allow multi-homes, provided that the location of a home development is in a high or highest resource area in the city. Moreover, recent community plan updates have increased densities in these areas. A substantial portion of the city, approximately 66%, is in high or highest resource areas. However, only 27% of affordable homes are permitted in these areas. More affordable homes are needed in higher resource areas to ensure the city is affirmatively furthering fair housing and meeting the needs of all community members. And it should be noted that almost all affordable homes permitted in the city are within multiple home developments, as shown in the top graph here on the right. However, only 15% of the highest resource areas and 36% of high resource areas permit multiple home developments. For the city to reach its very low, low, and moderate arena allocations, more affordable homes must be permitted in the higher resource areas of the city. And in closing, we wanted to note some key takeaways in the next step. In 2023, we approved more homes overall and more affordable homes in particular. While this is a positive development, the city will need to permit more than 82,000 homes by 2029 to meet our RENA goals, particularly regarding affordable homes in the aforementioned income categories. Affordable homes are primarily approved for multiple home developments, which are not permitted in large portions of the higher resource areas of the city. Additionally, moderate resource areas are producing the most affordable homes. As far as the next step, staff will begin preparation for the 2025 annual report on homes later in the year, and will incorporate the feedback from the Land Use and Housing Committee, the Planning Commission, and the City Council for use in the 2025 annual report on homes. Please let us know if you have any questions. Thank you.
Thank you so much for the presentation. I'm now turning to the IBA for their analysis.
Thank you, Council President. Amy Lee with the IBA's office. The city has made headway in improving the quality of housing data and providing more transparency since the first annual housing report was issued in 2018. This year's annual report includes additional data on several city incentive programs, homes by community plan areas and mobility zones, fair housing analysis, and historical permit issuance trends. Much of these go above and beyond the state reporting requirements and produce a more detailed look at where and how housing units are being produced. While this year's report does include analysis of city incentive programs such as affordable housing density bonus and complete communities, we know that the report only includes limited data related to the inclusionary housing requirements. For instance, the report does not include how many development projects paid the inclusionary in-lieu fee versus built affordable units, what types of resources the areas where affordable units are built have access to, and how many affordable units were built on-site versus off-site. This last one being a central data point that would help us gauge progress towards the goals of the program. Overall, all of these data points would provide important parameters to help assess the program's effectiveness, whether the policy is meeting its intended purpose, and inform future policy decisions. The city's inclusionary housing requirements allow developers flexibility by providing multiple ways for compliance, such as paying the in-lieu fees, building the affordable units off-site, or a combination of multiple options. This also creates a data tracking challenge for Housing Commission staff. The tracking of inclusionary housing data would require collaborative effort among the Housing Commission, Development Services, and City Planning. According to staff, City Planning has engaged in conversations with the Housing Commission and Development Services to develop a plan to improve data tracking of these elements and include additional reporting of inclusionary housing in future annual reports on homes. That concludes our comments. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, let's hear public comments, please.
Thank you. If I can have the following individuals please come up to the front row. We're starting with Joyce Inyana. If you can come up to the podium, to the lectern, Dana Gibbett after her, then Stephen Russell and Colleen Cusack. We're going to do a minute and a half due to the amount of speakers.
Sorry, I'm a little food loggy. Thank you, City Clerk Fuentes. Joe Sinyata, District 3. A minute and a half is good, thank you. Excuse me just a second. All right. 2023 home permitting data. Trends in building permit activity address the city's efforts to affirmatively further fair housing. Inclusionary housing regulations. So that's just some general data. But here's the specifics. 9,693 new homes permitted. 27% were deed restricted as affordable. ADU accounted for 20% of new permitted homes. That bothers me. I really would like us to look at what's happening with the ADU and for it. But I have a big concern about it suddenly, and I'm not quite clear why. More affordable homes are needed, of course, in the high and highest resource areas. This is from me again. Is that keeping them out of those areas, is that the NIMBY factor? And also, is that the resistance to density? So those are two areas that I think impact it. The HCD requested more data. Thank you,
Kevin. Thank you. Dana Gibbett, you have time ceded to you. If they can please raise their hand. David, Monty, thank you. Yvonne Jones, Susan Baldwin,
That's it, and the four. So you'll have 6 minutes. Please proceed.
Thank you. Next slide, please. Spoiler alert. 2023 appears impressive with almost 2,700 permits, 27% affordable, but Complete Communities needs a closer look. Replacement code hasn't produced any net units, so we are losing NOAA. It's overtaking affordable programs like inclusionary housing and density bonus. Reports should separate above market rate from 100% affordable projects, and the percentage of Complete Communities affordable is in low single digits when you deduct replacement units and 120% market rate units. We have unanswered questions. Has the Affordable Housing Permit Now program artificially inflated 2023 permits? We are saturating above market rate units based on prorated RENA targets. What does 2024 look like? Are we affirmatively furthering fair housing and moving people to opportunity zones? In which CTCAC areas are affordable units being built versus developers paying in-lieu fees? The bonus ADU program only provides 7 to 8% of the city's ADUs, while it drives up single-family home prices, removes starter homes, and decreases home ownership, especially in communities of color. Our conclusion, we are not on a path to meet our RENA goals or make San Diego more affordable to renters or first-time home buyers. Slide, please. Even with current progress, the city can't reasonably achieve its RENA goals for affordable housing. The last column projects San Diego permit outcomes based on current achievements. As in the previous RENA cycle, we're overproducing above moderate, undercounting moderate income, and underproducing lower income housing. Next, please. We are losing naturally occurring affordable housing with Complete Communities. Through 2023, it's produced 260 affordable units, but demolished 96 residential units. Therefore, only 164 net affordable units were created by Complete Communities. No actual replacement units are being built beyond Complete Communities affordable requirements because they are inclusive of, not exceeding the affordable housing requirements. Not one replacement unit has been built to replace the demolished units. Neighbors for a Better San Diego has made a recommendation to the 2025 LDC update to make Complete Communities replacement units additive. Next, please. As Complete Communities becomes more popular, affordable units, especially for low and very low income households, the blue columns, falls behind inclusionary housing requirements, the gray line. Next, please. Let's talk about the bonus ADU program. Next, please. Single family zoning is a meaningless label in San Diego because there is no zone that allows for less than 5 units per lot. Next, please. Where other California cities, single-family housing prices have flattened or declined, San Diego's policies have kept ours rising to $1.1 million per unit for a single-family home. Next, please. Oh boy, I'm going really fast. Regarding the returns on ADUs, non-bonus ADUs make up 92 to 93% of the ADUs built in San Diego. The bonus ADU program produces only 7 to 8% of San Diego's ADUs, and they're expensive. Backyard apartment complexes, and 40% of those are in high fire hazard zones. It's not producing what was promised, truly affordable housing, creating family housing for low-income people in high-opportunity zones. It isn't happening. Next, please. It's selling our neighborhoods to investors. These data are for the fourth quarter of 2022 in San Diego. And finally, last slide, please. It's affecting low-income neighborhoods the most. The 9% is the average for San Diego. 92105 is City Heights and Oak Park. 92115 is College, Rolando Park, and Talmadge. 92102 is Choya Valley or Choya View and Mount Hope. 92113, Barrio Logan, South Crest and Mountain View. And 92114, Skyline and Encanto. That's what's happening to our neighborhoods with the bonus ADU program. Thank you for your time, and I hope you'll take some time to go through this more slowly than I could. Thank you again.
Thank you. Next, we have Stephen Russell.
Good afternoon, Council President, members of this City Council. My name is Stephen Russell. I'm President and CEO of the San Diego Housing Federation. Our report today, I would say, shows that we've made huge strides in the city. When we look at what has been happening with zoning, the land development code, we made huge strides toward producing more housing. A lot of credit goes to this current mayoral administration for doing so, but also to this council for approving and supporting this growth in homes. We've also done almost everything that can be done in terms of expediting, so I think what government can do at this point, we have done. What I really want to point your attention to is that where we need the most production in affordable housing, we need revenue streams to support that. We need it on a scale that, as we saw with last week's affordable housing report, or the affordable housing fund report, the scale of resources we commit to affordable housing is nowhere near to the scale of the problem that we're facing. I'll also say that the price of single-family homes is not a good measure of the housing market for most San Diegans. The number of single-family homes within the city of San Diego is, for all intents and purposes, a fixed number. We're not going to get more. We don't have significant amounts of land for building more single-family homes. There will be row homes, townhomes, other kinds of ownership opportunities. But I would say that the single-family home is going to continue to soar out of reach of the reach of most of our citizens, and that is not the best measure of success of this program. We're producing more housing than ever in the last 2004. We need to stay on this track. Thank you.
Thank you for that concluding remark. Colleen Cusa.
Hi, good afternoon, Council. Colleen Cusa, community justice organizer and advocate. Market rate, San Diego gets a B, maybe B plus. You're on target. Affordable housing, it's an F minus. You're at the 10% range. And where is the plan for how we're going to improve our grade going forward? The housing report should include the loss of all affordable units during that same period. It should include the impact of short-term vacation rentals on the housing supply. It should include reference to the right to housing and measure attainment of that right. And it should also include reference to interim housing, especially in light of the Interim Housing Act that was recently signed into law by Governor Newsom that will allow funding of interim housing to scale. Very important that we need that and address that. The off-siting that this council allowed, where affordable units are off-sited to other zip codes, and that excludes the promise zones, limiting affordable to just different zip codes, is going to have a devastating impact on the production of affordable housing, because the affordable housing that needs to be produced under that off-siting to another zip code does not have to be produced for 5 years after the original project is built. We have an emergency now. We need that addressed now. Thank you
for that concluding comment. I'm sorry, the 5 minute timer here in council chambers. For the record, this item did receive one comment in favor and one comment in opposition via our e-comment forms, which have been distributed to the council. We have three speakers in the queue. Evan Strawn, if you can please unmute.
Good afternoon, Council President Emo Rivera and council members. My name is Evan Strawn, and I'm speaking on behalf of the San Diego Regional Chamber of Commerce. We represent over 2,200 member businesses and over 300,000 jobs. Our mission is to make the San Diego region the best place to live and work. First, I want to thank the planning department for presenting the annual report on homes this afternoon. Housing availability and costs continue to be two of the biggest issues affecting our city's residents, businesses, and employees. And for many of our members, these are an obstacle to attracting and retaining talent and growing in San Diego. The annual report provides reasons for optimism as we attempt to tackle the city's housing crisis. We want to thank the council, the mayor's office, planning department, DSD, and other stakeholders for prioritizing housing capacity and hitting the milestone of permitting more homes in 2023 than in any other year in the past decade. This achievement speaks to the effectiveness of incentives for home construction that are highlighted in the report, including the Affordable Home Density Bonus Program and Affordable Housing Permit Now. In spite of these achievements, we're unfortunately still in a housing crisis. Approximately 82,000 homes will need to be permitted by 2029 for the city to reach its green goals. We encourage council and the city to look for innovative ways to continue to incentivize housing construction and expand capacity, and the chamber looks forward to partnering with the city to make it happen. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Next we have Levi and Jeff Leone. If you can please unmute.
Hi, my name is Levi Giafalioni. I am a person who has formerly experienced homelessness. Through a lot of hard work, I have been trying to obtain the American dream of the single family home and all that for years. In 2019, when the COVID pandemic hit, I was working in homeless services and I was called by my boss and they said, some people are gonna want to stay home and collect unemployment, and that's okay if you want to do that, or you can continue to work through this pandemic, but we have no idea when it's going to end. In that year, the cost of housing real estate for my family increased 21%. So we need, at this point, it is no secret to me that there is absolutely no chance of me being able to live in a single family home. But what there is a chance of is that I could purchase a single family home, build an ADU with some down payment assistance, and I would take one of these vouchers that the other landlords won't take. So please, I am asking you, all of these initiatives are good, but we have got to figure out a way to get funding in the hands of San Diegans who are ready and prepared to go and solve this problem. Thank you.
Thank you, and our last speaker is Blair Beekman. If you can please unmute.
Hi, thank you. To add to the words of yesterday's item on the future of the sports arena area building, to me, there's a philosophy, there's a difference of philosophy at this time between middle-income housing and market-rate housing. And the long debate going on, not just in San Diego, but throughout California. It was very nicely talked about yesterday that, you know, we're waiting for the next year or two to see how interest rates are going, what the market is doing. I think there can be a real lot of promise in what middle-income housing can offer all levels of housing. And there's just a contingency that's very afraid of this and wants to return to traditional practices that entrusting market-rate housing is how to lead the way. Really good luck in working on this philosophy of defining our future based on housing everybody, not just from a market rate point of view. Middle income housing, can offer many more choices in how we build flexibility in building and then build for many different levels of income easier. And I think that has to be taken into account. And good luck how we can be brave to address that and create a really important philosophy like that for our future that really seems to be lacking. We're doing it, really quickly and doing the quick deal. But
your time has concluded. My apologies. Your time has concluded, and that does conclude public comment on item 331.
All right. Thank you so much. We will now begin council's discussion of this item, beginning with Councilmember Lee.
Thank you, Council President. Thank you for the presentation and again for the hard work that the city planning team has put in to create this year's annual report on homes, as well as for presenting it to the Land Use and Housing Committee back in July. I believe I shared then that we should be pleased to see the progress that we are continuing to make towards addressing our regional housing crisis. And I think we can all simultaneously acknowledge that even though we are seeing progress, that much more continues to be needed in the years ahead, especially if we're looking to meet not just our arena goals, but understanding that we have the need to meet some areas of our arena goals more than others as well. I do want to take a moment to share a couple of notes, especially because we did have a pretty robust discussion, I think, at committee. And so some of the key takeaways that really stood out to me in this year's report. First is just how much I appreciate the way the data is tracked and broken down, which I believe allows us to better understand the impacts across the city, And especially the differences that we might both see in geographical areas, but also by resource area. I think the report underscores how we can and should help monitor the effectiveness of some of our programs and policies. The report, of course, notes that only 27% of permitted affordable homes are located in high and highest resource areas, despite those areas encompassing more than 69% of the city of San Diego. And so you said it already, I would certainly agree with the assessment of the need for us to deliver more affordable homes, specifically in high and highest resource areas. I understand that is continuing to be a challenge as we approach this from a policy standpoint, but even in recently passed plan updates, I think we have sought to find ways to continue to address that concern. We also discussed in committee how the report typically shows how we're building a larger, I guess, proportion of above moderate units. I think we discussed a little bit about how it's challenging to track sort of the moderate and middle income units, because anything that's newly built without knowing exactly how much it's going for rent, it's difficult for us to track that. So as we move forward, I'd be very curious what other ways we can try to get a better sense if we are delivering on additional middle income units. I don't believe that those don't exist entirely, but I do recognize that it is a challenge to be able to track that. With 59% of permanent homes being one bedroom or studios, we've certainly highlighted the need for more homes that accommodate families. And I do believe that beyond incentive programs, we need to consider how other things, even, for example, our building code, which we discussed in a recent land use meeting, can have an impact on the ability to build more family units. I'm certainly pleased that the mayor's executive order for affordable homes permit now has helped to produce a little over 1,000 homes. And I think that clearly signifies the need for the city to continue prioritizing the permitting and developing not only for more housing across the board, but specifically for a greater proportion of very low, low and moderate income dwelling units. And then I think I noted last in the land use meeting that Kearny Mesa has the third highest number of permits. Even though that plan update passed in 2020, which added significant capacity to the area, certainly even after now 4 years, we're just beginning to see, I think, some of that capacity coming to fruition. So it's a reminder to folks that sometimes policies that we deliver don't result in immediate turnaround of homes, but it takes time to build up with the capacity that we put together. Given many of our recent housing trends, San Diego residents are certainly struggling to afford to live here. And so while we're pleased to see the significant progress with nearly 10,000 homes, ultimately the ability for us to solve this housing challenge comes with the help of all of the reforms, the policies, and the different processes that we are putting in place. Just recognizing that there isn't one single program or item that ultimately is the solution, but ultimately it's having all of the available tools that we need, which I think some of which are reflected within this report, helps us reach the impact that we're looking to have. So thank you again for sharing this. I think certainly as we look forward to the next year and beyond, looking for ways in which we can further refine the data and help use it in terms of how we approach our policy efforts moving forward. So, Mr. President, thank you for your comments.
Thank you, Council Relief. Council President, for example,
Thank you, Council President. I want to start off by thanking Council Member Relief for his leadership in the Land Use and Housing Committee. I will probably repeat and amplify some of the comments that he made. So I'll start off by thanking you and all the staff at City Planning for preparing this report and good work you do every day. As we've said, we can see the programs instituted by the mayor, the community plan updates, and implementation by staff are maturing, and more importantly, embraced by the housing industry to take advantage of the incentive the city is offering. I think we realize that the marketplace is slow to respond to some of the things we do, especially the community plan updates. I think downtown is still working to achieve the build out that the community plan many years ago does allow us. No slight on downtown, they're doing a great job. And additionally, development services have made significant efforts to improve efficiency and speed to process the application. And the comparison against other California cities is remarkable. The city of San Diego is delivering while other cities are still trying to catch up. And as noted, this is really an annual report that we need to do to kind of match our RENA goals, which was an ambitious idea developed about how we encourage individual cities to step up their game in terms of ensuring that housing are being delivered at all levels. I personally think RENA has met its match, and it's time to refocus.
in terms of how we deliver housing, because as we've said, and we'll keep repeating, some of the goals the city can't itself deliver. The city doesn't build homes. We set the table to do that. And as a consequence, as was clearly articulated, we're not achieving the levels of very low and moderate income housing that we need. And it's critical that we continue to focus on housing truly affordable, housing that is truly affordable to our lower income San Diegans. And while the numbers this year are small, they are a dramatic improvement of the past. That's a good thing, right? Some of the things we're doing are working. And so we're turning the corner. And I said this at committee, and I will mention this again since I just said it. The city does not build the housing. We set the table with our regulations, in combinations with regulations set by the state. It is private landowners, private businesses, private capital that builds that housing. Until we have more resources for the city and the Housing Commission to use for preservation, acquisition, gap financing, or construction, we will continue to see the private sector deliver housing production that meets their business plans and not the production that meets the needs of all San Diegans. And I think that's a challenge that we have. Unless somebody starts to figure out how to socialize housing development, bring back redevelopment, we're going to continue to struggle. And that's a problem. And I think it's a problem that we as a city are trying to face head on. But again, we can only do so much given the structure of how income-restricted housing for our lowest income folks are actually built. I want to thank the IBA for calling for data on the inclusionary housing versus the paying the in-lieu fee. I think we know where that lands, but I think if we actually had hard data as opposed to anecdotal, that would be helpful. Although I think the temperature to actually change the inclusionary percentage or the value of the in-lieu fee would meet with much resistance, but at least we know what we're faced up against. The other thing that I don't think I have heard of, but I'm going to throw the question out there on the table. We permitted 2,700 units of income restricted housing in 2023. What I'm trying to understand is what is actually the capacity of the system? These units are essentially 100% subsidized. So we're looking at low income tax credits, we're looking at gap financing, we're looking at a variety of things. We have an understanding of how many units we could actually build per year?
I think we're gonna have to get back to you on that one. I think what I'm hearing your question is given all of the availability of financing and funding that we know that we have available, what is the capacity that could be produced?
Yes.
Okay, I do not know the answer off the top of my head, but we're certainly happy to look into it and get back to you.
Okay, thank you. And I know that part of the challenge too is that funding is not guaranteed year to year. Some of the low-income tax credits, which I am not an expert on, I understand it's getting more competitive, it's gonna get more challenging. But it seems to me that there's actually a ceiling as to how many units we can deliver unless we change the model in which we actually subsidize these units. And it is remarkable to me that the way that these affordable housing developers have to create the capital stacks is like, we don't care about those kinds of units because we're gonna make it as difficult as possible for you to navigate that. That just seems kind of counter to what we talk about as what we're actually trying to achieve. So it is very good news. I know there's complaints about ADUs. I certainly hear a lot of complaints about ADUs. Again, all we can do is set the table and hope that the marketplace, and whether it's individual homeowners or developers, actually deliver them where they're needed at the prices that actually help people. And Council President, with that, I'll just wrap up but by saying thank you, City Planning, for what you're doing every day. I appreciate the Mayor's initiative. We've done a lot, we need even more, and I know we will do that. So thank you.
Thank you, Council President Pro Tem. Councilmember Whitburn.
Thank you, Council President, and I too want to thank the Planning Department for all of your work to meet the housing needs of all San Diegans. Most San Diegans, a majority, say they are worried about how much they pay for housing. And one of the populations that's struggling most these days is seniors, people who retired on an income that they thought would be sufficient at the time that they retired, but rents increased faster than their retirement income went up. And now one of the largest populations that is falling into homelessness is retirees. High rents are partly a function of there being an inadequate supply of housing that people can afford, so it's good that we are increasing the supply. The 9,693 homes that were permitted last year is a big step in the right direction. It has been decades since the city has issued that many permits for homes. And many of those homes are right here in District 3. Many of them are downtown. Look at all the cranes in the air downtown today. And to Councilmember LaCava's point, there is still a lot of capacity downtown. And we need to take advantage of that. Downtown is a great place to add housing. You can build up to 40 stories here. It's close to transit. It's close to jobs. It activates downtown. There's so many benefits to maximizing the amount of housing that we have here downtown. And the housing that we are building in District 3 is benefiting the renters who live in District 3 today. We are seeing rent increases starting to be kept in check. On average, we're seeing smaller increases, and in some cases, small decreases in rent prices here in District 3. And if rents hold steady and people's incomes increase a bit, that is more money in people's pockets, and that is what we want to see. So please keep up all the good work to add housing so that rents continue to stabilize, and I know that that is something that we will continue to prioritize. Thank you, Council President.
Thank you, Councilmember Woodburn. Councilmember Von Wolfer.
Thank you very much for the presentation from the Plan Department. I also want to thank my colleagues for asking great questions already. One thing I want to recognize the huge success of is the Affordable Housing Now program. But DSD, Plan, do you guys have any approval process in that, or is it just DSD?
The Affordable Housing Permit Now program is administered by the Development Services Department. Is there the department that works to implement our regulations and issue permits?
Well, it's doing great. I've been hearing from a lot of affordable developers, and that's been a huge success. And I'm hearing from other housing developers who would like to have the success of the housing permit, of Affordable Housing Permit Now. For housing such as, you know, senior housing, we're getting some 55 and older housing up in Penasquito, so the Junipers Project and others, and so I would love if we could focus on providing faster permits for seniors. As Councilor Woodburn said, that's one of our most concerning growing populations when it comes to housing affordability. But that I will ask at DSC, but I see Chris nodding, note taken. I'm also really pleased to see the significant strides made up in my district to increase affordable housing. On the one of the PowerPoint slides in the presentation showing the top 10 community planning districts who are permitting new affordable housing, three of the top 10 are in my district. Rancho Bernardo, Rancho Penasquitos, and I just had it right here, a Black Mountain Ranch. So over 350 affordable housing units were permitted up in District 5, and I think that's great. We have a lot of folks who are teachers and nurses and others who are not able to live in this district, even though they serve it. And one question I have about this report is, are the new homes permitted in this report, do those capture the numbers of new homes that we're actually providing as a city by doing our hotel and motel conversion?
Yes, yes, they are captured as part of that program, as they would be deed-restricted units that we then can report to the state of California.
Okay, fantastic. Is there a breakdown here of how many we've done that are just hotel and motel conversions?
We don't have that included as part of the report, but we can take a look into that.
Okay, I would love that. I think it's been highly successful in my district, and I'd love for more of that to happen, but it would be great to see that broken out. Also, I wanted to follow up on a question that Neighbors for Better San Diego brought up with regard to ADUs. I too see the ADUs are being built, but they're not being rented out for affordable prices. So is there anything we can do to try and actually incentivize affordable ADUs better? So ADUs that are permitted outside of the ADU home density bonus program are not required to be deed-restricted in any affordability level. You did see the numbers up on the screen for the ADU home density bonus program. Those are deed restricted mostly at the moderate, if not all at the moderate income level, but a majority of them are not required to be that way. I'm happy to talk to your office offline if you have any thoughts on how we can further incentivize.
Okay. You guys are the experts, but I'm happy to ask my staff if they have any thoughts on it, but I was wondering if the planning department had any more thoughts on how we incentivize affordable ADUs, especially for seniors. And so what about middle income housing? You know, what are we doing to make sure that young professionals can afford to live in San Diego?
So So one of the challenges with reporting is that unless a unit is deed restricted, it's very hard for us to have sufficient evidence available to count it as a moderate income home. And the reason why is because we issue so many permits and we have so many projects going on that it is a nearly impossible task for us to track those rents for a 30-day period without a deed restriction. Anecdotally, we do know that a lot of the developments that have been permitted are renting at rents that are affordable to a moderate income household. So there's that. It is always a challenge to make missing middle income, moderate income housing work, and that's something that we work on through the implementation of our work program, and excited to be continuing the progress forward over the next year and coming years after that.
Okay, got it. I'd be happy to follow up on how we, or I understand these are reporting requirements that are imposed on you, that you don't get to decide what you report, so, but I'd be happy to follow up on what we can do with middle-income housing. I get a lot of questions about that from my residents whose kids are graduating from high school and college up in Penasquito, Scripps Ranch, Ranch Bernardo, and they can't afford to buy houses here. So, but I appreciate this very much. I'm really glad that we're focusing more on building more affordable and attainable housing. Would love to follow up, Chris, with your office on how we can do more for senior housing and get the permits in faster. That would be fantastic. But thank you very much for the report. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Councilmember Von Wolfert. We'll now turn to Councilmember Foster.
Thank you, Council President. Thank you, staff, for the report. I do have a series of comments that I'm going to probably cut short, as it seems to be pretty repetitive in regards to what my colleagues have asked. But I'm still, as I look at the numbers, and as we appear to be achieving our mark in regards to market rate housing, there is a considerable need for affordable. And I am very concerned as we continue this process, and based on my reading and the conversations that we have, that we continue to have, I'm still not comfortable that we have something in place to mitigate the concentration of poverty. This president will continue to come with informational items and convey this, what a task it is to see affordable housing in high resource areas. And so I guess I'm going to ask the question, have we made any progress in putting something in place to further monitor and mitigate concentrations of poverty?
Yeah, so the city is obligated to affirmatively further for housing, and through that, we are continually looking at opportunities to increase housing at all income levels in all communities, but particularly affordable housing in high resource communities. We have taken this planning effort in recent initiatives that this council has adopted. For example, in the summer, this council adopted updates to the university community plan update, as well as an update to the uptown community plan focused in Hillcrest. These are exclusively high and highest resource areas and areas that we've looked to increase the capacity for significant amounts of new housing. In addition to that, other recent community plan updates have increased capacity in higher resource areas, such as Mission Valley and Kearny Mesa and Mira Mesa as well. We also look through our regular land development code updates on opportunities to incentivize and streamline additional affordable housing. We've had, I would say, dozens of reforms brought through in the last couple of years through our land development code update process to streamline the permitting of affordable housing, particularly in high resource areas as well. But it's not enough, as some of the council members have noted, for the city to put forward policies and regulations. It does take other actors to act, and it does take other realities to change.
So we don't control interest rates, we don't control the availability of labor and the cost of materials, and we don't control the overall economic feasibility of a particular project in a particular location. It is something that we work with the community and industry regularly to understand what government interventions we can do to incentivize and see the results of the affordable housing being located in those high resource areas.
And I appreciate that, and I think you kind of reiterated what Council President Pro Tem indicated, and just, I guess I'll say certain controls that we don't have. But in the response, I don't think I necessarily heard what is being done by city staff to monitor and mitigate the concentration of poverty. And so I am going to ask that, I don't know if it's an informational item, I don't know if it's an action item, I don't know what it is, but I think we need staff to come and provide, at least I would like to see that, as we are looking at what our housing production is. I think if you look at what's in front of us, I don't think any of us are surprised that we are making headway in market rate housing. And so I would ask that staff come back with some potential things that we can do in regards to further monitoring and mitigating concentrations of poverty. The other thing that I will, that is concerning to me, is we have designated the San Diego Black Arts and Culture District, where we are in a big redevelopment phase. Right now I have basically two 100% affordable projects that have been built. I have another one that's coming online. Across the street at Aikens, we have affordable housing. What are we doing to, per se, make sure as we are developing these areas that we are calling cultural districts or arts and culture districts, to ensure that we are not opening ourselves up to where we have nothing but deed restricted affordable housing based on the policies that we are putting in place?
In terms of reporting, in addition to this particular annual report, this is based off of data that is required to be reported to the state, which simply requires us to report number of units of permits issued and the affordability levels of those. We have produced this report with the intent of providing our policymakers with information to be able to tailor housing policies to the needs of our communities. So your feedback on that is very much appreciated. We also have an additional report that we are required to submit to HCD related to affirmatively furthering fair housing. We brought forward a comprehensive report on that called our biannual housing report. Yes, okay. That one we brought forward last year, and we'll be updating every other year to submit to the state. That has more information on the state's actions related to affirmatively furthering fair housing. Our certified housing element also does include a variety of actions to affirmatively further fair housing, and that report in YouTube does report on that. So we are happy to continue to do that, of course, and also providing additional information or briefings to your office.
Okay, I appreciate that, and I think, again, as we look at what we are doing, and I will also comment, and as much as I appreciate the program in which we are expediting affordable housing, I am concerned on the program and why I'm so adamant on asking about monitoring concentration of poverty, as we did, I believe, I've been told this, that one of the first projects that went through that program is in District 4. And what came out was a very large development that just plopped up right in the core of my district. and no one knew anything about the project. And they were issued permits, building was up, and I have a community that is just up in arms. And so that's why I keep asking my questions, because as I look at the developments that we are continuing to receive, as I, and especially amongst, or let me say adjacent to all of our more high profile corridors, because of the way we are set up from a transit perspective, we are just seeing nothing but a concentration, if I can have a few more moments, nothing but a concentration of affordable housing. And so I am eager to see what we can do to better monitor and mitigate that. In regards to, and maybe this is something for the Housing Commission, as we have received these projects, these affordable projects, and I know certain things that we did as we were talking about providing these amongst our transit corridors, there's certain amenities and things that are supposed to be provided, where folks were getting certain credits and so forth. What is the process to go back and make sure that the developments are including the amenities that they committed to providing?
So the requirements are part of the development review process. If you know of any projects that you believe have not included the required amenities, then that's something that you can report to the Development Services Building and Land Use Enforcement Division.
So just so I don't assume, are you indicating that that is complaint-based versus proactive as we are dealing with these properties? We've got tax credits and certain things, and certain, again, bonuses, this, that, and the third, that we are not going out and making sure that they're providing the amenities that they committed to?
We'll have to coordinate with the San Diego Housing Commission, because I'm not familiar with their particular programs with respect to that.
Councilmember, if I may real quick, Chris Ackerman with the Mayor's Office. So DSD, in coordination with Development Services, did create information both in 411, and as a form as well that's accompanying to it, where we do measure both the receiver site and the original site and all of the amenities. So I can share that with your office as well.
Okay, I'd appreciate that, because what I might find challenging is, do we even have a full list of what the amenities that they committed to? So us pulling that information in that manner may be difficult on our side. So understand, again, thank you for the report. The last thing that I will say is, and I'm going to bring, unfortunately, my contractor days into this, and I said this when we had the meeting at San Diego State, where we had a combined meeting with the county and the city. And I'm very adamant that unless we are specifically directly impacting costs, and cost, construction costs, building materials, those types of things, I just am not confident that we will find our way to what we are trying to achieve and to make San Diego a more affordable place to live. And so I highly encourage folks, and I said this as we are indicating this as a regional issue, right, throughout the state. I think there needs to be some efforts made to take our buying power and put some skin in the game and really start driving the market and cost to start to see some relief. So I will leave that there, and that concludes my comments.
Thank you, Councilor Foster. Thank you for the presentation and all the work that you all are doing. I appreciate the questions asked by my colleagues. A lot of rich conversation there. So I won't add too much. I will say that I think, not to be a squeaky wheel about this, but some of the data that we lack would be available if we had a rental registry. We've talked about an eviction registry. When we passed the tenant protection ordinance, a rental registry would give us data on much, much more data than we have right now in terms of what is being built,
what is available, what the prices of those units are. And so just to remind me and my colleagues that there is a way for us to have that data. It doesn't have to be a black hole. We need to fund that. We need to get be committed to getting it set up. But I think given the conversation we've had today, there could be some real benefits from us having that data. So we'll definitely continue to advocate for the establishment of that registry. I think the housing conversation is so complex. We have the permitting side of things and we have the financing side of things. And then within the financing side of things, we have affordable, we do distribute affordable, and we have market rate. And so I think what I'm hearing in this conversation is that there's a lot of interest in us seeing more affordable development happen, and that won't happen without, as the market is currently structured, and without more investment on our end. So I think it's just something for us to think about as a council in terms of how much we want to invest in order to make make more affordable projects pencil in our city. And we can do that in a way that prioritizes seniors. We can do that in a way that prioritizes deconcentrating poverty, desegregating communities. And we can do that in a way that I think achieves multiple policy goals. We just have to lean into it. The last thing that I wanted to touch on, Councilmember Von Wolpert, you talked about some of the folks in your communities who are having kids graduate and now really struggling to find a place for themselves here in San Diego. I'm sure some of them are moving back in and some of them are moving away. I've shared this story before a number of times now over the last couple weeks, and we'll share it again. Speaking to some San Diego State students a couple weeks ago, class of about 50 or 60 students, I asked them how many of them see themselves are confident that they will be able to afford to live in the city when they graduate, and 4 students raised their hand. And that is unacceptable. There is nothing worse for us as a community than young people in this community not seeing a future for themselves here. And that is not because they don't love this place. There were students who grew up here and students who moved here because they think it's amazing. It's because they simply do not believe that they will be able to afford to live here. One of the students who said he would be able to afford to live here, he said it's because he will be rich, which I appreciated his confidence, but that should not be the threshold to believe that you have a future in our city. And so I appreciate the conversation. Obviously, there's a lot more work to do here, but at the end of the day, we have a finite resource, and the folks with the most money are winning the battle over that resource. Increasing the supply, as you mentioned, Councilor Whitburn, will do a lot to kind of even out the competition. There's also some real chances, I think, for us as a council, for us as a city, and in partnership with the Housing Commission, to lean in and invest even more on the affordable side of things. So thank you again for all the work that you all are doing. Lots more work to do, but definitely appreciate the work that's been done.
Council President, I do want to flag for you that an item that we do have on our work program is an affordable home development master plan that is funded, we almost have a grant agreement for that to be funded from SANDIC through the REAP 2.0 program, and that is intended to look at how to leverage city-owned properties for housing opportunities. And then we also do work with other significant landholders in the nonprofit as well as the government space to identify additional opportunities to leverage that land within our jurisdiction as well.
Yep, and I'm very appreciative of those. When you say it's almost funded, I assume you just mean the plan, not the housing itself.
Of course.
Okay. Thought I'd give it a shot. It'd be great if it was the latter. Thank you again. Appreciate all the work that you all are doing. With that, as this is an info item, we don't need a motion here. We will move to item S502, please.
Thank you, Council President. Item S502 is the short-term action plan on homelessness. This is an informational item. If you'd like to speak on this item, please be sure to submit your speaker slip to the High Lectern now, if possible, for better meeting management. And if you are participating remotely, please be sure to raise your hand by pressing the raise your hand icon or *9. Thank you, Council President.
Thank you. All right, we've got folks transitioning into seats. I will, before I allow the presenters to introduce themselves, as a reminder, the city council meeting on July 22nd, 2024, the council, we provided direction to Homeless Strategies and Solutions Department to return with a series of requests, including the creation of a short-term action plan on homelessness. We are about to hear at least the beginnings of that plan. We are aiming to have an action item next week where we can actually provide action-oriented direction along these lines. But here's the informational status update on the creation of that plan. If our presenters would like to introduce themselves, please go ahead.
Sarah German and Casey Snell, and we'll need 30 minutes, please. Good afternoon, Council President Ida Rivera and Council Members. My name is Sarah German, and I'm the Director of the City's Homelessness Strategies and Solutions Department. I am joined by Casey Snell, Senior Vice President of Homeless and Housing Innovations of the San Diego Housing Commission. We are also joined by various members of our organization. Today, we are here together to present an informational item on a short-term action plan on homelessness. At the council meeting on July 22nd of this year, the City Council adopted a motion requesting city staff develop a short-term action plan on homelessness and return to council to present the plan. As the full motion on this slide details, the request includes collaboration with city council offices and pertinent parties to consider immediate shelter needs, use of master leases, direct financial assistance, and underutilized city property in response to shelter beds anticipated to come offline this year. In addition, the council allocated $4.2 million through the fiscal year 2025 budget process to identify new shelter locations for the Golden Hall Shelter and Paul Mirabal Center, which are both set to come online by the end of 2024. The timeline on this slide illustrates the quick evolution of the city's emergency shelter system. Prior to 2017, the city did not administer a formal year-round emergency shelter system as we associate our shelter system in present day. A response to a public health emergency, the city quickly stood up three temporary bridge shelters at the end of 2017 and beginning of 2018. The tent structure at 16th and Newton, which remains in operation today, and the tent structures for veterans in Midway and at the Father Joe's campus downtown, which are both no longer in place. The 17th and Imperial tent structure opened in 2019, as did the city's first brick and mortar shelter located at the second floor of Golden Hall. In 2020, due to the COVID-19 pandemic, city shelters relocated to the San Diego Convention Center to consolidate resources and staff. Following the pandemic in 2021, shelter operations transitioned back to their original sites and the city added the first floor of Golden Hall to the system. Later that year, the city also opened the Sea Heart Shelter at the former Pier 1 store located in Midway. Both the first floor of Golden Hall and Sea Heart shelters operated under a temporary use permit. In 2022, the city opened its first non-congregate shelter at Elise Hotel. In addition, that year, the city also opened another temporary bridge shelter in the parking lot of one of the County of San Diego's facilities in Midway. Last year, the city opened a second non-congregate shelter at another leased hotel. The city also introduced a new option to the system, the Safe Sleeping Program, which offers an alternative to traditional shelter by providing a safe place for individuals to stay in their own tent. And that brings us to this year, where we've encountered several shelter relocations due to the January storm. We also opened a shelter specifically for survivors of domestic violence. As the number and types of individuals experiencing unsheltered homelessness continues to change, the city has worked quickly to stand up many shelter options in an expedited manner, which in part explains the temporary nature of some of these programs, as time and space were limited given the immediate growing needs. Moving forward, HSSD recommends incorporation of long-term and permanent components in the system that can incorporate feedback from the listening session. And now I'd like to turn it over to Casey Snell with the San Diego Housing Commission to provide an overview of recent listening sessions that took place to help inform the future of our shelter system. HSSD and SDHC worked together over the last several weeks to coordinate and co-facilitate several listening sessions with key stakeholders. The purpose was to create a venue that fosters the collaboration and an open dialogue among stakeholders in the homelessness services sector. We focused on shelter programming, service models, site design, and operations as part of a comprehensive strategy to develop, support, and maintain a client-centered shelter system in the city of San Diego.
Together, we conducted 7 listening sessions, 4 with persons with lived experience or living experience in homelessness, and 3 with frontline staff and leadership. The sessions were conducted both virtually and in person. In order for these sessions to be informative, it was important for us to create a safe space where stakeholders felt comfortable in sharing their feedback. The main discussions were centered on site-based considerations and programmatic considerations for shelter programming, which will be shown on the next slide. At each session, HSSD and SDHC committed to conducting ongoing sessions and to continue to provide opportunities for feedback. On this slide, you see the items we asked stakeholders to rank and prioritize when considering new shelter opportunities. For potential shelter sites, participants considered shelter location, accessibility for vulnerable populations, expanded Americans with Disability Act or ADA accessibility, living space, privacy, common space, property storage, and design and decor. For potential programming, participants considered primary care access, substance use disorder, alcohol and other drug treatment, AOD, and supports, and employment readiness, financial literacy, general benefit access, document readiness for housing, transportation, and community building activities. This slide provides an overview of the top ranked site-based and programmatic considerations across all stakeholder groups. For site-based prioritization, the top consideration was for additional privacy and shelter and the type of living space offered. For this exercise, this was designed as bed configuration and composition, congregate, non-congregate, semi-congregate, quiet groups, and available facilities. Participants voiced that congregate settings create tension with other residents and that they would feel safer in a smaller or non-congregate setting. Studies have actually shown that there are benefits to creating more spacing and less density, and it also leads to better housing outcomes and less public health outbreaks. Each group noted a preference for smaller non-congregate shelters and to eliminate the use of bunk beds in all shelters. Feedback noted that privacy can also be addressed through the use of cubicles, curtains, or dividers and spacing beds further apart from one another. The second top consideration was location. All stakeholders agreed that being close to transportation services and resources were critical. Being near employment, schools, higher education, and medical services was also cited as important. For families, proximity to schools, childcare options, and free low-cost recreational spaces was a priority. There was a general consensus that shelters needed greater accessibility and design to meet the needs of vulnerable populations. Recommendations included creating larger pathways and walkways in shelters, adding more ADA beds, showers, and restrooms, and considering configurations that are flexible, such as placing ADA beds close to restrooms and amenities. It was noted that removing bunk beds eliminates them as a barrier for persons with mobility limitations being able to access shelter. Stakeholders also noted that more power outlets needed to be available to accommodate medical devices, and that there are no shelter is equipped or funded to provide additional services for persons who need extra support with their activities of daily living. This included considering dedicating shelter space to seniors that offer more support related to their specific needs. For programmatic prioritization, the top programmatic consideration was having access to supportive services and bringing more of these services on-site, including on-site medical and mental health services to reduce utilization of emergency services. There was also a consistent request to provide SUD and AOD services on-site or immediate access through partnering programs. Creating separate spaces and programs for persons in recovery was also noted. Lastly, most stakeholder groups stated that services for employment, improving employment readiness, and financial literacy are important for solving homelessness. Other recommendations included staff who are trained in SSI, SSDI outreach, access and recovery, or what's known as SOAR, navigating benefits, immigration services, documentation support, and storage for documents or sensitive information. Another top consideration was transportation. Stakeholders noted that there should be a larger variety of transportation options beyond bus passes, such as dedicated program vehicles or Uber, Lyft, and noting that transportation is critical to access off-site services.
The table on this slide provides a current list of all city-funded shelters, the various populations they serve, and their capacity. The current shelter capacity was delineated in detail during the comprehensive shelter strategy. Bolded are the two shelters that are the focus of this presentation today. Both Golden Hall and PMC are scheduled to close by the end of this year. The Comprehensive Shelter Strategy lays out several options for new and existing shelters. As the city adds new and diverse interventions and shelters, HSSD would like to ensure that the appropriate mixture of short and long-term shelters. The definitions on this slide are not intended to be definitive, but rather the starting point for an important conversation around how the city invests in shelters and the overall mix between short-term and long-term shelter beds serving the system. As you can see, over 50% of the total bed count on this slide fall into the short or emergency category. This means that overall interventions within the system will continue to require effort to sustain, including securing new sites, program changes, and general uncertainty. Of the two to three shelters coming offline, 264 beds were emergency, short-term, and 370 were considered long-term or permanent, which shows the constantly changing landscape to keep low-barrier interventions in place for persons experiencing unsheltered homelessness. HSSD and SDHC will continue to advocate for long-term and permanent shelter facilities that allow for a focus on effective programming, safety, and security that is both trauma-informed and focused on positive outcomes. As previously mentioned, the updated comprehensive shelter strategy, there are three shelters anticipated to close in the near future. The Golden Hall Shelter's temporary fire permit is set to expire, the Paul Mirabal Center is being converted into a detox and sober living center, and the Rachel's Promise Shelter is closing due to redevelopment. However, this redevelopment is now delayed until summer of next year. With the closure of these three sites, the city anticipates 654 beds to come online. Please note that this is the original census. As of this week, the current capacity at Golden Hall is 181 individuals and 218 individuals at the Paul Mirabal Center. As a side note, the updated comprehensive shelter strategy included the Seaheart Shelter as one of the shelters that would be anticipated to come offline soon due to the impending expiration of the temporary use permit. City staff is currently working on building improvement upgrades that will allow the site to be utilized for a longer period of time. I will now pass it back to Casey.
The Housing Commission has been collaborating with HSSD to identify potential sites and service providers for additional homelessness shelters. In late June, the Housing Commission issued two requests for qualifications, one to identify sites that could accommodate shelter operations, and one to gauge the capacity of experienced service providers to operate shelter programs in the city. Our RFQs are open indefinitely to allow us to continue to receive responses on an ongoing basis. Additionally, the Housing Commission's Real Estate Division has searched for and identified potential sites for shelter operations. These sites require initial vetting by our real estate team to determine potential feasibility before the city staff performs a more comprehensive analysis of these locations as possible shelter sites. To date, Housing Commission and our HSSD staff have visited 7 sites, 1 identified through the Housing Commission's RFQ process, and 6 out of 8 potential sites that the Housing Commission's real estate staff identified. The Housing Commission has also deemed 4 respondents qualified and responsive to operate potential shelter programs. We are working as expeditiously as possible while exercising diligence and prudence in assessing options for short-term shelter solutions.
In addition to the San Diego Housing Commission's request for qualifications, the city released a request for information for future shelter sites on September 6th with a closing date of October 7th. The solicitation calls on property owners and managers to offer up potential locations that could be used for shelter. Proposals will be evaluated for short, medium, long-term, and permanent use.
If sites are identified as viable options, next steps would include real estate negotiations along with budget and programmatic development. Budget requests would need to be submitted through the fiscal year 2026 proposed budget process. The city is committed to working with the Housing Commission on any sites that are submitted via the city's RFI that did not come through the Housing Commission's RFQ. There are numerous factors to consider when seeking new spaces for shelter use. Geographic, topographic, and practical suitability likely sound familiar as these are general items described in the shelter strategy. These factors address big picture questions, such as does the location make sense, is the land usable, and is it accessible?
The table on this slide provides more in-depth criteria to consider when setting shelters, as well as the department within the city that is the lead or primary reviewer for based on specific criteria and when it is needed to be met. As discussed earlier in this presentation, we often advise to adding new long-term and permanent solutions that are not dependent on Appendix P or a temporary fire permit. The site submitted through both the city's RFI and the Housing Commission RFQ will be evaluated based on the screening criteria. That being said, we are very much so here today to talk about what options are available in the short term. On August 1st, our office sent a memorandum to the council offices and Office of the Independent Budget Analyst requesting their input for feasible shelter use in alignment with the council's motion to partner with council offices in the development of a short-term action plan. The memorandum specifically asks for council to provide a privately owned site suitable for master leasing and underutilized city property and privately owned properties with a capacity for 50 to 1,000 people, including congregate and non-congregate options. The department received responses from Council Districts 1, 2, 3, 5, 6, 7, and 9, as well as from the Office of the Independent Budget Analyst, with a summary of the responses received seen on this slide. We have initially evaluated each site presented and eliminated those not currently available or vacant, or which don't meet the criteria mentioned previously. Others are under review in addition to the RFQ sites and the SDHC process. We also looked at city-owned sites that have been presented in the past. This table provides a summary of locations that have been evaluated for feasibility. As you were aware, the Golden Hall and Old Central Library shelters are feasible on a temporary basis. Significant tenant improvements would be needed at both shelters to change the use in order to extend the ability to operate as a shelter. 101 Ash, the city operations building downtown, and the eastern portion of the Pechanga Arena parking lot are currently all under review for feasibility. In addition, recreation centers and libraries that are underutilized are also a potential option that would need further review. Lastly, we have looked at Camp Barrett in a parking lot at the Environmental Services Department facility in Miramar and have deemed both sites not feasible. I will now pass it back over to Casey to get us started on short-term plans that are underway.
We have some timely opportunities in our system right now to leverage new programs and some available diversion funds. Through a collaborative approach, including SDHC, shelter providers, the Regional Task Force on Homelessness, the Downtown San Diego Partnership, Catholic Charities, and HSSD, we will be implementing a targeted initiative using diversion and flexible financial assistance to focus on shelter residents in the city to promote the advancement of residents to permanent or longer-term options. Diversion and flexible financial assistance will be provided through existing funding for these services through the RTFH's Flexible Funding Pool and SDHC's Housing First San Diego program. A targeted initiative focused on supporting self-resolution is critical in a time where housing resources are so limited. Diversion strategies utilize flexible financial assistance, shared housing strategies, and targeted case management can result in positive outcomes for shelter participants who have natural support and the ability to end their homelessness without a long-term subsidy. Housing resources available through the coordinated entry system are limited and generally only match to 4-5% of a shelter's total caseload at any given time. The goal of the initiative is to create flow-through and increase access to limited shelter beds, which have been impacted by the wind-down of Golden Hall and Paul Miracle Center. This initiative would provide targeted diversion supports to the following populations: people experiencing homelessness for the first time, residents with income and or natural supports to end their homelessness, and residents in shelter for over 1 year, regardless of income source. Additional housing case management and housing navigation support will be added from Catholic Charities and SDHC's Housing First team. HSSD will coordinate on-site participation of the Family Reunification Program. The Homelessness Response Center team will support with system navigation and the transition of matched individuals to their housing programs by addressing any barriers that may be delaying the time to lease up. Shelter staff will participate in the Shared Housing Collaborative led by townspeople and sponsored by RTFH, and will target long-term stayers who have been in shelter for more than a year. A review of current data shows that 14% of adults, or 180, and 13% of families in shelter are experiencing homelessness for the first time. They have never accessed a homelessness service previously. Diversion and prevention programs are critical to our efforts to reduce inflow, while at the same time continuing to support participants so that their episode of homelessness is as short as possible. As presented in the updated shelter strategy, both safe sleeping sites have space to expand. The safe sleeping site located at 20th and B currently has 136 spaces in place. An additional 50 platforms can be added for a new total capacity of 186 spaces. In addition, the O Block site can add additional spaces as well. The current configuration of the site includes approximately 408 spaces.
The program can add an additional 182 spaces for an expanded total of up to around 590 spaces. With both sites being open for almost a full year now, we've seen tremendous success with this newer shelter option. In FY24, 86% of program participants were previously living in a place not meant for habitation before enrolling into the program. While we often highlight positive exits from our shelter programs, we also want to recognize this type of success as well. The 86% represents 1,180 individuals who are living on the street and moved into safe sleeping with a safe space for themselves, meals, restrooms, and showers, and connections to critical resources. A new opportunity to add additional non-congregate interventions into the system is actively being negotiated with several different hotels.
The Housing Commission has been in discussion with several partner agencies to discuss the feasibility of expanding beds at current sites. The strategy could possibly add 176 to 360 new shelter opportunities to the system.
As we bring the presentation to a close and ask for council input, we would like to briefly revisit some takeaways from the listening sessions to help guide council conversations. Throughout the listening sessions, we heard about the need for privacy and security that follow a trauma-informed and client-centered approach. We also heard about the need for assistance and resources for individuals with incontinence. In addition, we learned about the importance of having space in the shelters for leisure activities and relaxation. Shelter location was also a topic that was mentioned, including ensuring that facilities are close to services and that there is an environment of an inclusive community.
We also heard about the desire for support groups and lived experience peer support to navigate complex obstacles based on one's unique situation. We also heard childcare and non-traditional employment opportunities, as well as credit repair and legal aid supports, identified as programmatic components that will assist positive outcomes. Effective December 31st, 2024, the city is anticipating a loss of 614 shelter beds, which serve single adults as well as provide direct placement opportunities for law enforcement partners. This includes 264 beds for single adult males and 350 beds for single men and women. The short-term plan identified in this update provides options to potentially replace 468 to 688 new shelter opportunities. Fully realized, this plan could result in either a mitigated loss of only 146 beds or could potentially increase it by 74. This slide summarizes the five strategies and options presented today to address short-term shelter needs. They represent diverse interventions and approaches to enhance the existing system through increased diversion supports, the expansion or conversion of existing programs, and the potential addition of new partner beds. They also highlight the potential to bring on additional non-congregate opportunities to meet the needs of underserved populations, such as seniors, or those with disabling conditions, or families with children. As we noticed in the previous slide, the approximate funding we have available to bring some of these resources online is $4.2 million, with the exception of the safe sleeping option, which has adequate budget allocated in FY25 budget. As we continue to work on the viability and ultimate budget of each option presented, we understand there will be funding decisions to be made. We look forward to the discussion and input from Council today, and will bring action items for Council review and approval based on today's discussion. I'll turn it back over to Sarah to close this out.
Thank you so much. This does conclude our presentation. I would just like to end by noting how the Council President began, that my office and the administration are committed to working with the Council President's office to bring an action item forward to address the short-term action plan, and we'll take any questions that you may have.
Thank you so much, both of you, for the presentation. What's your public comment?
Thank you, Council President. We do have several speakers here in chambers and some popping up online. Everyone will have a minute each, and there are people that are ceding time, starting with Paul Downing. And then if I can have the following individuals please come up to the yellow reserve seats: Peter Comiskey, Josh Culver, Makeda Chiam, Robert Young, and Tina Chilters. If you can all please come forward to the yellow reserve seats. Paul, you have time ceded to you by Maria Gibb. You can please raise your hand. Thank you. Melinda Horsey, thank you so much. We'll have 3 minutes. Please proceed.
I believe Maria proceeded to 1 minute, and Melinda should have her own time. Apologize if that was.
Melinda has here that she's donating her call to donating her time to you. Melinda, would you like your own time?
Sure.
Okay, then you'll have 2 minutes. Thank you.
Great, thank you. Good afternoon. My name is Paul Downey. I'm president and CEO of Serving Seniors, and as already been noted this afternoon, older adults make up about a third of the folks experiencing homelessness on our streets. And that number keeps going up every year. Many of those seniors are seeking assistance with Serving Seniors at one of the two transitional shelters that we operate, or at our Gary and Mary West Senior Wellness Center. About 25% of the clients that come into that center are actively experiencing homelessness. There is a clear need for a dedicated older adult shelter or shelters, one that can quickly move these folks through the system into permanent housing. And such a shelter must have things like space for folks with mobility issues, more privacy for folks that are navigating health issues like incontinence. One of the big issues is that currently shelters turn away folks who cannot meet their activities of daily living, or ADLs, meaning they can't dress themselves, can't feed themselves, can't bathe themselves. And that creates a major problem for seniors and folks with disabilities who cannot get into an existing shelter. The reason is there isn't staffing in the shelters, there isn't funding for the staffing in the shelters. There are some long-term solutions like CalAIM and in-home support services, but those sometimes take weeks to bring to fruition to provide the assistance. There must be dedicated caregivers in shelters who can assist folks who need help with their ADLs, or else you're going to continue this revolving door of folks ending up in the emergency department because they can't meet their ADLs. We also need recuperative beds, hospice, higher staffing ratios, easy to read signs for older adults, access to information for
Thank
folks
you.
Who do not have smart devices.
Thank you for that concluding comment, Melinda.
Good afternoon, City Council members. I'm Melinda Forsey. I'm the COO of Serving Seniors, and I'm here to offer my strong support of the short-term plan. Specifically, I'd like to echo the need of the creation of additional shelters tailored to older adults. In addition to smaller shelters, for the larger shelters, we also need designated areas for these seniors with specific services to address their critical needs. But we also know that prevention and diversion are also incredibly impactful. So I'd also like to share my strong support for the diversion program that was proposed, the additional financial assistance. And then lastly, continuing to fund programs like the shallow rental subsidy program. We thank the city for its efforts. We've had tremendous impact with this program, and continuing to fund prevention and diversion also helps keep people housed and off the streets. Thank you.
Thank you. Next is Peter Kaminsky.
Good afternoon, Council President Vio Rivera and members of the Council. Peter Kaminsky, Bobo Park Cultural Partnership. First, I'd like to recognize the department and contractors who are running and programming Lot O and 20th and B. These seem to be very well managed. I note that the total number of tents in these two locations might increase by some 43%. As a short-term solution, and presuming the services management teams are similarly apportioned, the cultural partnership will continue to support. There is, however, one consideration that I believe will not serve members of the city well. It would reduce an existing service and amenity in Balboa Park. While I do not see it specifically called out in the presentation, I do see one rec center identified. I'm presuming that's the activity center in Balboa Park. Located adjacent to three museum members and home to a number of sports and cultural activities, the activity center is neither underutilized nor should be used as a shelter on any basis. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, John.
Good afternoon. Josh Culver. I am one of the chairs for the Balboa Park Safety and Security Committee. We meet once a month, and we already have the homeless shelter at Lotto, which Peter has been run very well, and we've seen that, but we continue to have issues and put strains on the institutions within the park. And if we were to add on another shelter, it would put more strains on those institutions to hire more security, to provide more cameras, and to deal with a lot of the situations that we have to, and that we all know, due to the fact that we have low police officers available to respond. So really, the institutions themselves are having to face those issues head on, and the staff is being strained to a point where we can't continue to just put shelters into an area without having safety and security in front of mind for the public, visitors, and the staff that have to work in those areas. Thank you.
Thank you. Next is Makeda.
Greetings, Council. I'm from the Worldview Cultural Center in Balboa Park. The Activity Center has ongoing programs throughout the year for all ages, including the Thursday Club, the Badminton and Tennis Table Clubs, and the Science Fair. As an organization in Balboa Park, our facilities have been broken into by the unhoused people, and you know, we're tired of picking up trash, alcohol bottles, and needles. It's not safe at night. It's not safe for our children's classes during the daytime. We have disruptions at the Worldview Center, like pulling the fire alarm, and we had to pay for that. Yelling, cursing, and a BB gun pulled on our staff member. Throwing down barricades and pieces. So we would like to have another alternative.
Thank you for that concluding remark. Robert Young, after that will be Tina Childers, Lindell Fairley, Shane Huang.
Good afternoon, everyone. I'm from the Samuel Badminton Club. The Samuel Badminton Club and the Table Tennis Association, Volleyball, Thursday Club, and San Diego Science Fair all use Balboa Park on a regular basis throughout the year. The Badminton Club and Table Tennis Club use their time and space in the Activity Center not only for recreation and hosting national tournaments, but also as an opportunity to teach and train other players. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Childers, and I'm speaking in support of keeping the Balboa Park Activity Center, Recreation Center as is. There's a lot of people using it. It pulls from the whole community of San Diego, from South Bay, East County, North County. People come to play and work to learn their sports, pickleball, badminton, table tennis. And it's a healthy environment for young people, also a whole range, intergenerational playing, from young little kids to 80 years old and beyond. We're all working together and playing. So when you go anytime, there's people together. And most importantly, I feel, are the high school kids. They're heavily utilizing this facility to learn their sports, to work together, to be off their cell phones, and interacting and getting good exercise. And it is a great stress reliever for many people in our community. Health professionals.
Thank you for that. Linda?
Good afternoon, City Council. My name is Lindell Fairley. Mr. Whitburn, I am a resident of your third district. I play table tennis in the Balboa Park Activity Center. And for me and the other people who play there, it's a very important part of our quality of life. So personally, I will never vote again for any elected official who votes to remove the sports from the building. So I think that, of course, it's necessary to deal with the homeless problem. But I hope that that problem can be dealt with without severely damaging the quality of life of the voters and taxpayers for whom the Balboa Park Activity Center is a very important part of our quality of life. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Well, you have 10 people seating you time. They can please raise their hand. Kennedy Pisa? Thank you. Sambat? Thank you. Hazel? And Justin? Thank you so much. You'll have 5 minutes. Please proceed.
Good afternoon, council members and everyone. My name is Shan Huang. I'm a badminton player, member, officer, and board director of San Diego Badminton Club. I'm here to oppose using the Bobo Park Activity Center as a temporary or permanent homeless shelter. I'm here for myself, my club members, people using Bobo Park Activity Center, I'll call it BPAC for short, for sports. And also we have over 1,200 signers of my petition. Homelessness is an important issue. However, BPAC is not a solution, temporary or permanent. September 5, 2027, Union Tribune reported that the City Council President, Sean Ilovera, casually suggested for BPAC to be used as a homeless shelter. We were shocked and angry. I started an online petition on September 8 to preserve BPAC as a sports-only facility. As of today, we have over 1,220 signatures. I will submit those for your records after. Even some homeless people commented on the petition opposing using BPAC as a homeless shelter. We also held a rally on Saturday, September 21. I can also send pictures of that rally opposing using it as a shelter. BPAC as a sports center, as previous speakers mentioned, promotes physical, mental, and mental health, fosters social connections, and provides a safe, inclusive environment for people of all ages and backgrounds. The 4 month shutdown in the spring and early summer is a huge disruption. About San Diego Badminton Club, it was formed in 1937 as a nonprofit sports center, a sports club. Bobo Park served as home to our club since the 30s, initially in municipal building, then federal building, and subsequently Bobo Park Activity Center. We have a current annual membership of about 600 people. Half of them are kids under the age of 18. So BPAC is the only public facility in San Diego that provides dedicated badminton playtime. The facility is also shared by other sports, as previously mentioned. Other than serving the community, the club also hosts national and state badminton tournaments, such as Cal State Games, San Diego Senior Games, and Dave Freeman Badminton Open Tournament at BPAC. Dave Freeman Badminton Open was held since 1957, so we have a longer history than the Super Bowl. So, you know, these tournaments also bring to the city economic benefits because visitors come to San Diego, they rent hotels, they eat, they, you know, visit our beautiful city, and it's important to keep it that way. Badminton is a very fun recreational sport. It's also an Olympic sport. San Diego has produced many national, international champions, although in the long past. We hope to do so again in the future, though. So we were happy to have received responses from the mayor's office and council member Stephen Whitman's office supporting our initiative. So again, we just want to emphasize Bobo Park Activity Center should be reserved for sports and not be considered as a permanent or temporary homeless shelter. I want to submit the pictures of the rally, my petition, and the signatures of my petition for meeting records. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
If I can invite everyone to come up to the yellow reserve seats, Terrence Dutton, Joy Senyata, Jackson Ferris, Patty Riddle, and Kenny Nguyen.
as well as Kevin Nguyen. Terrence, you can come up to the mic.
Council members, thank you so much for giving us time to talk about. My name is Terrence Stuffing. I live in La Jolla. I'm here to ask you not to use BPAC or Redmond, I'm sorry, Belvoir Park Activity Center as a homeless shelter. I guess I want to emphasize first how busy it is after school hours and especially then after people are done with work. The waiting time for any play on the badminton courts, 10 badminton courts, is 45 minutes, and closer to 6 o'clock in the evening, it's a whole hour. That's for 30 minutes of play time. You get to play for 30 minutes, and then you have to sit down and wait another hour. Secondly, it's really important that so many kids rely on BPAC. It's their second home.
Thank you for that concluding comment. Joyce Nana?
Thank you, City Clerk Pointe, Joyce Nana, District 3. I have 17 years of homelessness work with all the wonderful people, many. I really do think that we need to pause, take a deep breath on our housing crisis reality and how it can be resolved. We need to be willing to accept reality. Non-homeless people are different in what they want from our city. Homeless people are different from what they want from our city. The third component is the reality of our resources, what is available. In my opinion, we continue to do our best. Nobody on this planet knows the path out of this dense forest of homelessness. This is a valuable next step. I'm so glad it happened. Looking forward to the next step of tour.
Thank you for that concluding remark, Jackson.
Hello, I'm speaking to the utilization of Balboa Park Activity Center. I've been a volunteer tournament organizer at Balboa Park Activity Center nearly every Thursday for the last 10 years. The value of the club has to be in many regulars as a place for competition, exercise, and community is immense. More so, the value it brings to San Diego cannot be understated. Table tennis is one of few sports that can be played at a high level by youth and seniors alike. Offers a safe means to develop and maintain crucial coordination, reflexes, and cardiovascular fitness. Belleville Park Activity Center offers the greatest access to the sport that I've seen in any city and is a known destination to visitors to San Diego, both domestic and international. Without it, options to participate in the sport are limited. Surely a more appropriate location can be selected. Thank you.
How do you have text given to you by Ruben? Yeah, thank you, Ruben. Thank you so much. Noah Cutler, you'll have 3 minutes. Please proceed.
Good afternoon, City Council members. My name is Patty Riddle. I'm chair of the Balboa Park and Morley Field Community Recreation Council. I have a master's in physical education and a PhD in health education from the University of Illinois, Champaign-Urbana. My doctoral dissertation studied how to encourage lifetime exercise in promoting health. Balboa Park Activity Center, BPAC, provides that encouragement. It was built specifically for volleyball, badminton, and table tennis. It's always in use with toddlers through 90-year-olds playing sports all day and night. It is a safe place for middle and high school students to play badminton and do their homework after school and whenever school is out, summer and over the Christmas break. It is their safe refuge and it is a drug prevention program. It's the only public gym with a 30-foot high ceiling, which is needed for badminton and volleyball. It has a good wooden floor for those sports. It is free and close to public transportation. Table tennis always uses their scheduled time. They have hosted the Paralympics at BPAC. And if you want a strictly practical reason to keep BPAC open to the public and not use it as a homeless shelter, here it is. BPAC has the only public bathroom east of Park Boulevard. BPAC's bathrooms are used by athletes, by patrons who regularly use the courtroom, by the administration building for photo shoots, weddings, and quinceañeras. And it's used by tourists visiting the Veterans Museum or just looking around. As I walk between the parking lot to the gym and back to the parking lot, I have often directed desperate tourists to the BPAC bathrooms. BPAC is definitely not underused. It must not be used as a homeless shelter. When it was used as a homeless shelter this spring for 4 months, it took staff 2 weeks to clean the place, and especially to clean the bathrooms that we all depend on. So please keep BPAC for sports and for San Diegans and for tourists needing to use the bathroom. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
After that will be Kevin Wynn, and then I'm going to ask Dennis Sison or Denise Sison, Rachel Hayes, Stephen Russell, and Colleen Cusack to please come up to the yellow reserve seats. Please proceed.
Hi, everybody. This is really hard for you to see there and see what people are going on. So I'm representing me and my friend. I came here to ask you, invite you to come and walk at the sea. Okay? Come on Tuesday or Thursday, you see senior play, 90 years old, 80 years old, 70 years old play. And you see how happy they are. Come between 5 to 8 and see how hard working people come in and play. They play for a few hours, then they go home. Come do it in the summer, you see all the kids here all day long. Sometimes I have to wait an hour, almost 2 hours to go in for 30 minutes. Okay. So this is more like a second home to us. And if you take away this from us, a lot of people will be unhappy. So before we make any decision, I'm asking you guys to please have time, come and look and see how happy we are. Thank you.
Thank you for that question.
Hi everyone. I'm a parent, and just like any of you guys are, but my kids play badminton, and a lot of the Asian Americans play badminton. And this is the only facility where they can do badminton after school. If you guys are taking this away, where are my kids gonna go? You know? So badminton is like an academic sport, you know, for Asian Americans. You know, just like chess or golf or other group of, you know. But the badminton is a unique sport, is an academic sport for Asian Americans, and hundreds of Asian Americans play the sport. And this is the only facility where my kids can go to after school to play sport. And it's unfair if you guys are taking that away from my kid. Just to even think about taking that and give it to the homeless.
Thank you for that concluding comment. Dennis Sison. Do you have some people who can please raise their hand? Barry Holred. Barry, thank you. And Janine Shee. Thank you. You'll have 3 minutes. Please proceed.
Thank you. Council President, Council members. You've heard it all already. I'm not going to repeat it. Badminton players, there's 600 of them registered. Table tennis, one of which I am, about 300. Volleyball, about 150, 200. So there's about 1,100 regular users. You've also heard that, yeah, one of the main criteria was that staff was to look for underutilized facilities. I hope by now you've been convinced Balboa Park Activity Center is anything but underutilized. So you've heard it all. In my mind, it's a melting pot of ethnicities, of age groups. You've got young kids that are attracted by some free lessons that are given by our coaches. You've got older kids, and George, raise your hand. I met George there when he was about 8 or 9 years old. He's now a 19-year-old, and he's here fighting for the facility that his younger brother is going to be using. So there is momentum, there's a need, there's an appreciation. And I guess, yeah, I don't want to take too much time. You've heard about the Thursday Club. You've heard about the rummage sale, the national tournaments that attract people from all over the country and some of them from international destinations. The firefighters have used the facility for some of their tournaments. And I guess the only new thing, besides everything that you've already heard already, and I thought I was going to be the first one, but somebody's already mentioned it. This is not just our facility. It's your facility. And I don't know how many of you have actually been there, but this is a formal invitation to every one of you. Come join us. You have my email somewhere on my comment list. Give us a list of about 15 or 20 of you. Bring some of your staff members. I personally will organize a little tournament, and I guarantee you, you'll walk away with a refreshing attitude, some mingling with some of your fellow members that you won't get anywhere else, not in a council meeting, not in a staff meeting. It's an informal, fun time, and I really sincerely mean it. If we could get a group of you to come down and join us, I'm speaking on behalf of the Table Tennis Association, but I'm pretty sure if some of you want to take on some badminton, a much tougher game, by the way, you're welcome to contact any of the badminton players. But please, come down and see it. How many, if I may ask, how many have actually been in the Balboa Activity Center? My council member. No one else. Another council member. There's two of you that know. Come and join us. It's fun, I guarantee you. The laughter you'll see from the young kids to the adults to the old seniors. You'll love it.
Thank you for that. Rachel Hayes, if you can please come up. After that will be Stephen Russell, Colleen Cusack, Natalie Rashke, Julie Porter, and Dick Fair. If you can please start making your way up to the front row. Please proceed.
Hi, Rachel Hayes with Lived Experience Advisors. You know, we start off with a homeless crisis, implemented a ban. You got shelters going. I'm all for it. The smaller the better, so less trauma. Trust me, I know. Bottom line is, we have a housing crisis. We have a severe housing crisis. Housing that everyone can afford, and more permanent supportive housing with wraparound services. Shelter beds do not become empty unless people are placed into housing. I know people that have waited over 3 years to be placed into housing. That is a broken system. Housing insecure to homelessness. Bottom line, that's it. And it doesn't matter what your affliction is, or what your mental status is, or anything like that. Everybody deserves to be somewhere and have a door to lock.
Thank you. Next is Stephen Russell.
I'm here to express support for the shelter plan, and I'm coming at this from the perspective of a member of the ad hoc working group on aging and homelessness, also from my work very closely with the Homeless Experience Advocacy and Leadership Group that is hosted at the San Diego Housing Federation, but most importantly from my members who are operating permanent supportive housing throughout the county of San Diego and deal with the trauma that comes in when people have lived on the streets for too long. So the plan here is really good, that it's nuanced. You've looked at different populations having different needs. That is critical. The services side of this is essential because a bed alone is not a shelter. It does not promote healing. It does not lead people forward. I really want to thank both the San Diego Housing Commission and
city staff for working so closely together on this. We need more of that kind of cooperation. I want to thank the mayor and the leadership of you with the Housing Authority in terms of bringing this together and bringing forward a comprehensive plan. We're here to support you, and we thank you for your time.
Thank you. Next is Colin Zupa. I am really frustrated because the cry on indicates short-term action plan on homelessness, and we haven't heard a short-term action plan on homelessness. We've heard of a short-term action plan on shelters, and that's not the same thing. Long-term action plan on homelessness is affordable housing to scale. Short-term action plan for homelessness is to free up immediate housing, such as short-term vacation rentals, enforcing that ordinance for local residents instead of out-of-towners. I did hear a simple mention of the Interim Housing Act that Governor Newsom just signed into law. That act frees up state funding for interim housing, and that should be part of any plan. You asked for a request for information for privately owned sites suitable for master leasing. Those are short-term vacation rentals. And we can master lease, though, the underutilized short-term vacation rentals because they're operating as hotels. And if they don't want to be master leased, then they can opt out of the short-term vacation rental program. We can use those to shelter the families, seniors, couples, caretakers, disabled, and LGBTQ, for which there are no shelter options at present. Thank you.
Thank you for that good comment. Next is Madeline. Madeline, you're asking if you have time to leave.
Floor 12. Go down.